that's amazing.
Sign.
Yeah, that's great. It's amazing. We sell, every time we put that up, no, maybe that's not. That's every, okay. Every time we put that sign on the house, it sells.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Guys, write this down. You can get these banners from wholesalebanners.com. That's B-A-N-N-E-R-Z. Wholesalebanners with a Z.com. They're cheap. And what you do is you fill in their form telling you what you want the sign to say and what colors. They'll get you back a prototype within a couple of hours. You okay that, 2 days, your sign is in the mail. Or actually, 2 or 3 days later, you'll have your sign. Cheap, cheap. So they're big banner signs with grommets on them so you can hang them. I don't think this one is showing in your book. Oh, there it is. There it is. That's it. Take a look at that one. So that's an actual house that we have sold, actually.
And you forced us to rehab.
Yeah, that I forced you to rehab.
I wanted to buy and rehab.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, yeah. Big sign. Well, while you're at it, you might want to take a look at what on the front of what our houses look like when they're rehab. Notice the nice landscaping there and the actual plants. And by the way, the guys, if you're going to rehab a house, you need to plant plants that are already grown, not some that are going to grow up someday and like that. But notice the sign. And compare these two. This one does not have all caps. Never all caps. Never all caps. Just the first letter of each word capitalized. And you'll see this one's a lot easier to read than the one on the previous page. All right? Signs. You want one great big old banner on every house. You're probably going to want to know what size that is, Scott.
That is, goodness, I think about 8 feet by four.
I don't think that's 4 feet wide.
Sure.
No, I know it's not. It's not 4 feet. That's probably 2 feet by 6 feet, is my guess.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Pre-screening prospects. This is very important, and we've already had a bunch of questions on this. Let me see how many of them we can answer right now. Page 47. We've already touched on it. There's two things we're looking for. Again, most builders and realtors are looking for credit. And, of course, they want down payment as well. But they don't have to be as big. We generally get way more down than any buyer needs to qualify with FHA. No, even on the cheapies. In fact, the house we just showed you guys, this house right here, we put a tenant buyer in there who's got good credit now. We're in the process of getting her a loan, and she gave us $5,000 to move in, and this is an $85,000 sale. So she's putting more down than she needs already. Honestly, what we're looking for is money. Since we're lease optioning or selling with overfinancing or signing, we need money. So if they come to us and they don't have thousands of dollars, they're not in our buyer's pool. Which also is why it takes us a little longer than it would if we were to lower our standards on money required. We're not going to. On page 47, we're looking for money or credit. But in our case, money, if you want to cash out, you've got to get the credit. And there's four exit strategies at the bottom of that page. Buyers who will qualify for new financing. Problem with that is the goose dies. Good side is sometimes you get a big check. Okay. Selling on a lease purchase, I don't care about their credit. I mean, I care about their money. Selling with owner financing, same. And signing contract, same. So, you'll notice that three out of the four exit strategies, usually with poor credit. But again, we got 80% of the market to ourselves. If you'll turn the page and look over page 48 and 49, you'll see a script that I wrote for somebody to talk to your buyers. And I don't want that somebody to be you, but if it has to be you on the front end, then go ahead and do it yourself till you quickly replace yourself. Let's recap. Buyer calls in either voicemail or calls in Pat Live if you want them to call live. Buyer tells you what house they're calling on. Somebody's got to call back the buyer to direct them to the house and fill out this sheet. This sheet can only be done with somebody on the telephone. However, these same questions are on a website when you get one of those set up where buyers come to it. If you go look at our website, eaglehomebuyers.com, you'll find that if the buyer presses the button, that do I buy a house, and there's certain instructions there to get to this, and then if they fill this out and submit it to us, then we physically, manually call them back and tell them how to get in the house and any other house that might be of interest to them that we have if we don't think they're going to go into the one we got, right? If you'll take a look at this script, guys, you'll see that it does the job for you if I can just convince you to use it and not be all over the board. In fact, we're having a little problem with this with our own staff. She has a little difficulty following scripts, and therefore she misses a lot of the information. And there's a reason I wrote this script, and that was actually to follow, all right? It asked the important questions. And in fact, let's just go down it real quick. This one is designed for you to accept an inbound call. All you've got to do is change the first two or three lines, and the same script applies if you're outbounding on a buyer who's already called you. Are you calling for yourself or someone else? Because if they're calling for someone else, you might as well save your breath. No matter what you tell them, they're going to help. I would simply say, well, listen, have the buyer call us back. I can't tell me how many years we let people call us and found out after we talked to them for 10 minutes, they're actually calling for somebody else. All right? And then the customer, where is home located? And look at my answer, assuming this is true for you. Well, we actually have several. Can I ask you a few questions so I can determine which ones fit your needs? What kind of questions? Well, are you looking to rent or to buy? Guys, you're going to get an awful lot of people who call them your sale ads that want to rent, right?
Yeah.
Okay, waste of time. I'm not in the rent business. I'm in the selling business.
Just about, by the way, we actually, I know some people like the rent to own buzzwords. I don't like the word rent at all. We don't use that in our language. We do find that alleviates a lot of
lease purchase.
Yeah, lease purchase, don't they?
Yeah. All right. That was my next question, because I'd like to get to the point. Okay. How much money do you have to invest in your new home? And then you're going to get that answer out of them, regardless of whether they dance around it or not, because they might be dancing around it. Now, how much do I need? Well, that varies depending on the house and your abilities. What do you mean? Well, depending on the amount of cash you have to invest, your credit strength, and your ability to do cleaning and cosmetic repairs. Well, how much do I need? Well, how much you got? What's the most you can put down? And you must get that answer out of them. Do not let anybody on your staff or your crew or your VA or whatever ever have a number leave their mouth. Remember, the minute you name the down payment, you lose. Well, I'll look at my, well, sir, or ma'am, or John, or whatever. I always try to use their first names. The more money you have, the better terms we can create, which will determine your total down payment as well as your monthly obligation. How much do you have to work with? In other words, that's a nice way of saying, quit dancing around the bush and give me a number. And I'll tell you what I've learned over the years. If you have a hard time getting from them what they have down, they probably don't have any down, or they know they're not, you know they're a time waster. Continuing on, would you consider your credit good, fair, or poor? Right away, I know what I'm dealing with. I know whether their credit is poor, and or at least what they think is poor. Notice I didn't say, how's your credit? I said, is your credit good, fair, or poor? Making it clear to them that we talk to a lot of people with poor credit. Would you be interested in a home that needs some repair? So I'm asking, I want to know if they need to be on my work for equity buyers list. On down. And this is what I always like to say. Have you ever tried to buy a home before? If the answer is yes, what stopped you? What stopped you? That gets to the heart of what their real problem is. And then what kind of payments do you need? What's the most you can pay? How many bedrooms? And then are you saying that a two-bedroom house won't work if they say three and you have any other requirements? So I'll tell you guys, if you use that script, it'll serve you well. And if you look at page 50, that's just a sheet to record the answers from this script all on one sheet.
Just set me back for a second.
Yeah.
Down here, you have a note. One of the things, especially in any sort of axe deals or things that down payment and helping up our cash is paramount to us. So, of course, we're going to find out how much they have to work with today. If it's less than 10%, and almost even if it is more than 10%, we're always going to ask if they have any additional funds coming in. They have a credit card they can get cash from, family friends they can borrow. And we also ask, do you have anything of value that you may be interested in trading?
Yep.
You never know what you're going to get. We get some crazy items here and there.
Yep.
So, remember harping on that, because if you're doing an axe deal, and the only way you're getting paid is from what they have to put down up front. And so we always want to explore that to the fullest ability to see what else they think they've got out there. You'd be surprised when you ask, you probe a little bit, that they've got, did they ever tell you everything they got on the first amount?
No.
So there's more. They tell you they got 10.
Well, sometimes they do.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. You know they got more. And so actually takes these and fills them out and has a thumbtack on her wall. We've got.
That's because she's old.
That's because she's old. I didn't say that.
You know what you got to do. I don't care.
But we've got literally probably 20 to 30 buyers with significant down payments that we don't have houses for. So
significant meaning what?
Probably 20,000 or more.
Oh, yeah, and some of them a lot more.
Yeah, we got a couple. We have two that actually have 100,000 put down. We got to find some that are going to go somewhere else. But anyway, we do use this in-house every day, fill it out, and that helps us keep very good track of buyers.
All right, now there's some good news for you. We are actually going to have for you very shortly, all set up for you as Gold Club members, the database to house all this information in, where you can just plug it in. And actually, we're even going to set your website up for you here. In fact, Nick, you are probably the best qualified guy to comment on this. If you want to come around here and tell us, I want to know the exact date and time we can expect this to be ready. I'm putting him on the spot, guys. He didn't know this was coming. He's creating this thing. So give us something that resembles the truth, will you?
Well, I'm working with the company, and they say that it's going to be done by tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
Now, of course, that's going to be their version. We're going to get it. We're going to give them changes. You're going to go through it a lot.
Yeah. So we're going to have a database set up to where they put all the buyers in, put the information on this sheet in. Actually, and I think it was 19 columns the last time I looked at.
Right.
Okay. And the whole goal is to have this information entered so that I can go pull a report anytime I want. Say I got a house on the west side. Okay. I want all people looking for a house on the west side with $10,000 or more. Up pops the report. And now I've got my very targeted list. Right?
Correct.
Okay. In addition to that, we're going to set their site up for them, which is going to be a buying and a selling site.
Yes. It's mainly going to be focused on buying, but it will have a page to take a house for sale.
Perfect. So just picture this, guys. You've got somebody calling and getting these answers. RVAs will do it for you as well, but that's the $997 a month level on your sheet, which incidentally replaces a full-time employee. You might think that's a lot of money, but go hire people and see if that how cheap that is. Yeah. So just whoever's making these calls for you, we're going to have it set up to where it automatically goes into your database as it's filled out on the screen. So this will be on your screen, and then so you've automatically populated your database, make life easier for you. We're always trying to come up with everything we can do to make less work, and preferably the more of it somebody else does, the better. All right? So realistically, it's going to be at least a month before we're ready to release this. I just want you to know it's coming. Okay? It'll be a Gold Club level membership. It'll be a little higher price than your basic membership, but it'll be dirt cheap for what it's going to do for you. Okay. My manual is 3 pages behind the version we email students. What? Oh, you mean the whole day I've been giving them the wrong page numbers? Say something. Sorry, guys. I didn't know I had a different manual than everybody else. Okay, well, let's move on here. Page 51. Or my page 51.
Right? Yeah.
Okay, page 55.
Right.
Here's your application and information sheet. And it is the application that we need to get filled out from the buyer. Now, we put these in the house on the countertop with some instructions and some the flyer on the house, which is done on Craigslist or Postlets. And we put some instructions in there to tell them to fill us out and contact us. But honestly, most of these are taken by phone, aren't they? So when the person gets the buyer on the phone and the buyer says, yeah, I want to buy a house from you because they can lease option or buy with no qualifying, then our goal is to get this application filled out. Then we know exactly what we're working with. So then, what do you do with the applications when you get them?
Well, we get the application, the next step form here, too.
Yeah. No.
That's on the Gold Club site. We get that, too. It just gives a little more information. What we've gotten into the habit of doing, obviously, we want to take a peek at it at that point. One of the things that I don't like to do is negotiate until we have a deposit. I find myself sometimes negotiating blindly, and then so we
you don't negotiate until you find out how much they got, though.
Well, sure.
But how much they can pay per month.
Right. And at that point, by the time they fill an application, things make sense, obviously, and they haven't seen the house. We'll send them back and forth, but by the time
short this application is, guys. We do not need one of them big old long, Fannie Mae 1003 forms with all the assets, liability. We don't need all that crap. We don't need all that crap because I'm not qualifying them for a loan. I'm only qualifying them for my loan. I am the committee. So if I see what I need to see on here, which I'll be discussing in just a second, that's good enough. Because truthfully, nobody knows what all our bills are anyway. You can't sit here and, make, and remember all the bills you owe and I'll put them on a piece of paper. That's going to be on their credit report, which we're going to see a copy of before we approve them anyway. So why bother getting it all here? And that way they don't have to say or lie about it.
Sellers on an X deal that ultimately would like to see the buyer cash out, this report is invaluable. Debt to income ratio, credit report score. Paul's even got a mortgage match, kind of a proprietary software he made that
and it lines them up for how much they're putting down and what kind of loan they may qualify for. So those people out there that are pre-screening your buyers too much, finding reasons that they just won't work instead of why they will work, something like this is going to be very valuable to you to kind of see where they stand today. And Kyle will also give you a time frame, in some cases even a percentage, as to when they'll qualify for traditional financing.
I've seen this guy raise their credit score 100 points in 6 months.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
And, today, what credit score do they need? Depends on what kind of financing they're going to get. But there isn't much you can't get off the credit report in time. I wanted to make a point, and I forgot what it was now. Whatever it was important. Anyway, write down that website, screenthetenant.com. Screenthetenant.com is another great service that we're put together. Oh, I know what it was. Guys, if you're selling houses with owner financing, you must comply with Dodd-Frank, and Dodd-Frank requires you to have some information in your file that this person you're selling to can afford this house. And you should have verification of income in there and a debt ratio report. So I would not sell with owner financing without having this stuff in the file. Can't set people up for failure. Not that we ever would anyway, but it's nice to have this documents in the file and prepared by someone else. It even makes it better. All right, the meeting, next page. Let's go to page 55. So here we are. We've found a tenant buyer. They've seen the house. They like the house. We know how much they have to work with. We know how much they can pay per month. We think we want them. Now we've had Paul check them out. We've got Paul's report back. And I know you're going to ask, do you collect the $50 from the tenant buyer? No. Frankly, it's more of a pain in the neck than it's worth to us. Worst case, we paid the $50 and we eat it. It's cost of doing business, for crying out loud. You mess around trying to collect that $50, you're going to blow off a good buyer. Not to mention the time lapse that's going to go by. So we just pay it. Or we don't. Maybe Paul sends us a bill and we don't pay it. I don't know, but just kidding. Anyway, so you have this package in your hand now, but you're not going to order this package until you already know you want this buyer. That means they got enough money to satisfy you. And incidentally, here's a question you might want to write down that I actually didn't get for granted. That is, do you have all this money available now? Do you have all this money available now? Make them convince you that they do. Like the one Scott was telling you about where they said they had 12 grand, but they really didn't have 12 grand. Yeah, or I got it coming in a month. Good, call me in a month. Yeah. So anyway, you got to set up a meeting once you know you want them. And that meeting is going to either be in your office if you have one, and if not, you could do it in the home, or you could do it at McDonald's. It doesn't matter, but somewhere you got to have a meeting with them to determine for sure you want this tenant buyer. Of course, we bring them to our office. Before I had an office, I tell you, I did a lot of deals at McDonald's. Anyway, on the next page is a checklist, page 55, of what you're trying to accomplish and what you want to collect at that meeting. Now, if you look at the top, things to collect, paycheck stubs, Paul's already done that for you. A copy of a driver's license, you should, today, here's how you copy a driver's license. You get out your cell phone and take a picture of it. That's how you copy a driver's license today. We actually used to have to run down to someplace to have a copier. Don't have to do that anymore. At this meeting is where you're going to collect your first deposit check. And our minimum that we will collect at the meeting is $2,500 now. Remember, we're dealing with people $10,000 or higher, in rare cases less. If they can't pay you $2,500 and make a commitment to buy this house, what in the world do you want to meet with them for? That means they're lying to you if they don't have the money. All right? So we're going to collect the buy. We tell them, make sure you bring a checkbook. And, of course, they ask, well, how much do I need? And our answer is, well, my answer would be, we generally get it all. I got it all. Okay. We take $2,500. The more money you get out of them at the meeting, less chance you got of them going away.
Absolutely.
All right. And deposit receipt agreement is signed at the meeting. We'll come back to that in a second. This is the meeting where you discuss any questions they have. I always start the meeting off that way when I do them. Do you have any questions? And then I make sure that they understand the deal. And then we talk about down payment. Listen, I'm trying to decide whether I want your down payment or not. It's less than I wanted. Is there any way we can get more? That's where we try to get it up. Point. Don't make them believe that they already have the house when you arrange the meeting. The meeting is the approval meeting to determine whether you want them or not. They're still trying to qualify themselves to you. But if you make the mistake of telling them you got the house, then it takes away all your negotiating power. Now, the terms, we've got to talk about the term. How do you get to the conclusion on the term?
Well, it depends on whether or not it's a sandwich or some sub-tier that we want to stay in. And obviously, if it's something that we're in the middle of, we're not trying to rush them out.
Well, in my case, I don't care if they ever cash out. In your case, you might want them to cash out. So this is a business decision on your part here. Many investors will put them on a 1, 2, 3-year lease, forcing them to go get a loan and cash out during that time. If I don't have any deadline by, in other words, if I haven't lease optioned this house with a 3-year term, then I'm free to accept whatever term I want on the exit. But if I'm bound by a term going in, then I have to make sure my term getting out is less than that. If I take over a debt subject too, I can give as long a term as we want. If I buy over the debts, I can go on the term as we want. And of course, if I pay cash, same thing. So when they come to me, and I would look them in the face and listen, how long the lease do you want? Well, then let them tell me because I don't care.
But I will say that sellers that have equity on annex deals, we do find in most cases, don't want a forever term. In fact, we've come to find that most actually would prefer something in a relatively short period. Of course, we can't make
sellers.
Sellers.
Yeah,
correct.
Of course.
So one of the things that Paul Ritter will do, and the benefit of having his report at the meeting prior to, is that he's going to tell you how much time they like they're going to need.
Yeah.
Can't guarantee it either, but how much time they like they're going to need before they can go get a loan.
Yeah. And
we typically, based on what the seller is looking for and based on what the buyer is able to do from Paul Ritter's standpoint, we'll somehow try to match all that up so it ultimately can be what we call tailor-made to the buyer's time frame for ultimately financing.
Or his report will tell you, don't touch these people. Yes. And put, oh, they're the prince of darkness.
Yes. You know, better once in a while.
And, of course, you wouldn't have a meeting if that's the case.
Right.
All right. Closing procedure, which basically means you just tell them, okay, well, it looks like we have a meeting of the minds here. We'll be closing this the day after tomorrow. And literally, you call the attorney and set an appointment right there with us sitting there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do. Okay. We talk about the 30-day repair warranty. We always give them 30 days. We warrant the systems because the seller's warranting them to us. And you can always buy a repair warranty for a year. They can buy it or you can buy it. You guys should all. I forgot the website, but I'm sure you won't have any trouble finding it. Now go to Google and see where you can buy home warranties. It'll cover pretty much everything in the house for the first year. It's actually a good thing. Might even pay you to pay for it.
Yeah. Although you're going to find many sellers will pay for it themselves.
Yeah.
Because it's a selling feature, and of course it gets them off the hook if there's a major repair.
And they don't, the buyers will.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Late penalty. My late penalty has always been 10% after 5 days. If it's owner financing now, it can't be more than 8%, according to Dodd-Frank. But you've got to discuss the late penalty. My conversation goes something like, you know, Scott, the rent's due on the 1st. It's late on the 5th. If it comes in on the 6th, make sure you add 10% to that because my late penalty is 10%, and there are no exceptions. And just for the record, Scott, if the post office delivered it late, maybe you don't get the late penalty from them because I'm still going to want it. So you might want to send it earlier. So just want you to know, if I don't receive the rent by the end of closing on the 5th day, I'm going to, you know, I may not accept it unless you include the late penalty with it. Guys, I enforce that to the hilt. And if you don't enforce it, then you won't get the late penalty. All right, if it's an assignment, this is where we have to get into the discussion. That's going to be an assignment. Do you get into that discussion prior to the meeting or not?
No.
No,
prior to the meeting. No.
So it's at the meeting where we disclose. Listen, I have this contract with these seller. Here's the terms, and I'm going to assign it to you for the $10,000 you said you could put down, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And any details that you think, any elements that you think need to be brought up, this is the time to where we have a complete meeting of the minds. And we're going to put that meeting of the minds in written form on page 56, 57, what's your page?
60.
Okay, 60 and 61. All right. If you look at the top of page 60, it's for non-axe deals only, letter of intent. And the next page is for axe deals only on over-leveraged houses. Basically, all this does is lay out the terms that you just agreed to, get the buyer to sign off on it. Guys, this is not binding. So you don't have a contract here just because you did this letter of intent. But I want something in writing with their signature on it that they agreed and understand the terms that we just proposed. If you read both of these, they're pretty much self-explanatory. Now, let's get over to the next page here, whatever page it is, 62, I guess, right? Because this is a big one. What to do if the buyer wants to get a loan within the next year or two and wants credit for the assignment fee toward their down payment? That's common, isn't it? So somebody comes in and wants to give you a $20,000 down payment. If they have any intent of getting a new loan, then they're going to want that $20,000 to go toward their down payment. So get this, guys. If you assign somebody a contract from you or a seller to a buyer, they can't go apply for a loan and use that assignment fee as a down payment because the lender won't accept it. The lender's going to need to see some document to where they have given the seller or you a down payment or a non-refundable option deposit. So we're going to try to explain to you what we do in those cases, but I've got it step by step right here on this page. So if I fail, then if you follow these steps, you'll begin it. So here we go. If you need to slap yourself to wake up, now would be a good time to do it because you're going to need your full attention on this one. All right, picture this. Seller signs a lease option agreement to me, and I intended to assign that agreement when I got it from the seller. Now here comes this buyer at 20 grand, says I'm going to need credit. Okay, if I'm lease optioning it for the $200,000 with nothing down, and somebody brings me 20, and I owe the seller 200, then I can't. I've got to show where I got that 20, so when they go to a lender, they can prove they put the 20 down. So my only choice here is I've got to raise the price from 200 to 220 and show the $20,000 as a down payment or a non-refundable option deposit. Let me say that again. If I've got it under contract for 200 and I'm selling it to somebody with 20 grand, I'm going to have to change the price to 220 and show the 20 they gave me as a non-refundable option deposit. So that means I've got to do the following. If I've got a contract here from Scott to buy it at 200, ABC Corp is the buyer. Now, ABC Corp has got to sublease it to the new tenant buyer for 220, showing it got 20 down. So we're going to create a new, exact same lease, except the price and the down payment is different. Everything else is the same. So I'm going to sublease it to my buyer, get their 20, and then assign that lease back to my seller so I can get out of it if it's an axe deal. Now, you all got that right. Okay. When I assign my lease from my company to my buyer back to my seller, I'm going to have the seller void the lease that I have with them. So they're going to sign a general release here. You know, I got coming up and void that. I hope you got that. If you didn't, try to just read that carefully. And
well, I'll tell you, it's originally started out where you get a lease option from the seller and you're assigning that to the buyer. All we're doing here is getting a lease option from the seller, recreating a new lease from us to the buyer at higher terms, and just assigning that new lease right back to the seller. So very simple, but it does take a little to digest that.
Well, think how long it took to create it. You have trouble digesting it. Scott comes to me with his problem. Oh, crap, I didn't have that in my mind. So we had a grant. We've done that many times. That
well, we do it to me. Yeah, we do most of them that way because we're dealing in nicer homes, nicer areas, higher dollar deposits. And
yeah.
Number one, someone that comes in with money, they want to recognize that off the price.
Yeah.
So if they're going to put 20 down, they want to get $20,000 of credit. And, of course, most people in that capacity at some point want to finance out and would like to get credit for it. So
yeah.
It's a much easier sell, by the way, to the buyer.
Yeah.
If you can give them credit for the money and really sure. Reduce it off the price.
Well, it's case by case, guys. For example, if the buyer's coming in and buying an over-leveraged house with a 10-year lease,
yes.
They could care less.
Yeah.
They could care less. They don't even need to worry about it. But if I got a buyer that's close, all right, we've got to deal with it. Next page is another problem we're going to deal with. And that is, what if I'm lease optioning someone an over-leveraged house? Let's say it's a $200,000 house and there's $250,000 owed on it. And now somebody comes in and brings me a $20,000 assignment fee or deposit. And now a year later they want to refinance it. But there's more owed on it than it's worth. So we handle that very simply. We get the buyer to understand that the only thing we can do here, nobody, incidentally, in my example, the buyer would be getting a 10-year lease because it's over-leveraged. If we can't get a 10-year lease on an over-leveraged house, guys, we generally won't mess with it, but honestly, 5 years would work because any buyer would think that the market's going to come back and the equity come back in 5 years. But let's say I'm lease optioning this thing, and I know I've got 5 to 10 years. Okay, so I got plenty of time to clean up my credit and do whatever I'm going to do. But what simple. At the time you want to go get a loan, we're going to have the seller sign a statement that if there's more owed on it than it's worth, they will participate in a short sale at that time and cooperate with you to get the bank's permission to reduce your sales price down to the value of the property at that time. So, and by the way, guys, any bank will do that. Any bank that knows they have an over-leveraged house and they see a willing, ready, and able buyer will short sale that thing down to market value. Because that's all you're asking them to do is knock it down to market value so they can get cashed out. That's kind of what they, you know, what they look for on these over-leveraged houses anyway. Now, if you'll turn the page, you'll notice that there's an addendum that we had created that the buyer and the seller signed at the time we installed the lease option tenant buyer. And it makes absolutely no warranties that we're going to do anything, or that the bank will accept a short sale or anything of that nature. So we don't want to put the seller in a position to where they're liable if the bank doesn't accept it. So in reality, the buyer has to be willing to live with the fact that the short sale may not work when they get ready to refinance. But don't forget, they got a long-term lease. So they don't have to move. They just wait it out if they need to. Worst case is, I don't refinance next year. I have to do it 5 years from now.
They're still getting the benefit of the principal paid out the whole time.
And more importantly, they're getting the benefit of the of living in this beautiful home that they can't buy because they can't qualify at the bank. Guys, the American dream of home ownership is a very, very, very strong motivation for people, especially if they've lost a home and they got kids and they want to get their life back and their self-esteem back and get in another one. So when you give them the ability to control a beautiful home, especially on a longer-term lease, believe me, the sales price means nothing to them. Nothing. In fact, have you ever had any problem with that?
I was just going to say, it will turn into a mortgage. I don't think so. I don't think that the last deal over it. I think that people are more concerned with the terms.
Yeah, the down payment, monthly payments, all they care about.
Yeah, the price is almost secondary.
All right. Okay, next page is my magic agreement. If you will turn to page 66.
66. Yeah.
66. You'll see an application and receipt agreement. This is a beautiful piece of paper. So in a nutshell, here's what this says, ladies and gentlemen. This is a receipt for the buyer's deposit. That's what this is, okay? This says that I'll take your deposit and I'll apply it if we accept you. I will give it back to you if we don't. But if I accept you and then you back out, I'm keeping your deposit. That's all this says. This does not say I'm taking my house off the market and selling it to you. It does not obligate you to do anything except the things I just said. Therefore, you literally can have two or three or four of these application receipt agreements on any one house at any one time without taking them off the market. And I promise you, if you don't use this and you go sign an agreement with them, the next day somebody's going to come along and offer you twice as much down. You always want to leave your options open, guys and gals, always. This, the truth is, if I'm selling with owner financing or I'm lease purchasing, I'm going to be closing the next couple of days anyway, most of the time, right? So this is not, I'm not really worried about a long-term agreement where I'm going to miss a buyer, but I tell you, we just had one. Buyer comes in, wants to put 25 down right after that, he thinks he's in. In fact, he's even given us a $5,000 deposit. We got one of these, and 2 days later, here comes somebody with 60 grand. Okay, tough decision. Let's see, 25, 60. I'm taking the 60. the end of that story is the 60 didn't come through yet. So the 25, now lucky on that one. But trust me, I'd have no problem calling the buyer up and saying, listen, man, somebody come along with a lot more money. I got to take them.
Of course, legally, this puts you in a
position. And you're not under any legal obligation. Now, of course, they're going to want their money back, so I always tell them, well, let me hold your deposit, and I'll go find you someplace else. And if they're pissed off and they don't want to do that, we just send them the money back. And we have no choice. In fact, we just did that. We sent back a $2,500 deposit this week, didn't we, because the seller didn't want our buyer.
Well,
that was rare.
Yeah, it really wasn't. It was math. It had to do math. The payment was a little higher, and the seller would have taken her, but we're really trying to squeeze that square peg into the round hole. It just wasn't fitting.
I don't even want to know what that means. The agreement you're going to use on every single lease option tenant buyer you install in any house, anywhere, anytime, whether it's an axe deal or whether you own it or whether you sandwich leasing it, except in Texas. Texans, you've got to use your own lease option agreements. you guys that are coming to my boot camps, my boot camp, we're going to deliver them to you. You guys that aren't, they'll be available to you on the May 8th webinar because our Texas guys got them all done for you. In Texas, you should not use this agreement. You should get one that complies with Texas rules. All the rest of the country, you can use this agreement after you run it by your attorney the first time. Believe me, you're going to like this agreement, and so will your attorney. Now, you should know that on your boat club site, the lease option agreement that I showed you a while ago, and this one, and the work for equity agreement have just been recently updated by our attorney. And he didn't do that much to it, but he did a few changes to it. So you're getting the most recently version of it. If you'll notice, it's got a table of contents in it. And if you remember, on your long list of agreements, it was down at the bottom, the one that says use for acts. And we do use this for acts, but we also use it. If I buy a house cash and I lease option it out, this is the agreement I use. If I take over debt subject to and lease option it, this is the agreement. If I buy it with owner financing and I lease option it, this is the agreement. This is also the agreement that I'll take and get the seller to sign if I absolutely know it's an acts deal. Because remember, this agreement is the one I would use to install a tenant buyer. Therefore, it's the one I want my seller to use to install a tenant buyer.
Which we do tell them.
Yes.
Nice piece of information for them to know. It's the same agreement we would use if we were selling ourselves.
Yes. So therefore, this agreement protects the seller more than the buyer, which I think is your obligation. If you're putting a tenant buyer in somebody's house, you ought to protect the seller. Okay? This agreement is also explained on that lesson that I showed you on the Gold Club site. There's a couple of things in here I want you to see. If you'll turn to page 68 for a moment and look down on number 5, you'll see that after the conditions and improvements, it says that I accept the premises in its as-is condition. Now, remember, this is for your tenant buyer. This is when you're installing a tenant buyer in their house. And it says they're responsible for all the repairs. Right below that it says, lessor warrants during only the first 30 days of the lease, the heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical systems. So your seller, in this case, will be your lessor if you're assigning this. If you own the property, you will be the lessor. So you're responsible for the systems during the first 30 days, which frankly you should be. You don't want to put anybody in a house that you know the systems are not working. At least if it's represented to be in good working order. And if they aren't working, then you ought to fix them. But in most cases, that's going to fall right back on our seller. If I'm buying a house for cash, however, I'm going to install it to a buyer with this exact same agreement. And I point blank tell them something wrong first 30 days, call us, and we'll fix it. And we do immediately. Okay, look at pay number 8, maintenance and repairs. If you look at the last paragraph in number 8, it says that it is a condition of this agreement and partial and valuable consideration for the option agreement that lessee be responsible for all maintenance to the premises, including without limitations, after the aforesaid 30-day period, heating, cooling, plumbing, da-da-da-da-da, passes all the repairs on to the tenant buyer. Every time I lease option a house, the tenant buyer is responsible for 100% of the repairs. And all you landlords out there that are just renting houses, stop that nonsense. Stop that nonsense. If you're straight renting single-family houses, as far as I'm concerned, that's foolish. You're giving away all the great big old option deposits you could get, and you're absorbing the repair cost if you just make that one change in your business. Convert them all to lease options, and then as they move, go get the big deposits for that option from your tenant buyers. Totally change your business.
So your PPG request, you had two members who had literally 100. One case units, they change it like that. The savings on maintenance and repair, and combined with the deposits they got, literally changed their life, gave them life back because they weren't married all these rental properties.
Put money from the edge of bankruptcy into not have to worry about all this crap.
Yeah.
When you don't have tenants calling you because their sink or plumbing broke, that is great. I've got tenants in houses been there for 10 years. I haven't heard a word from them. I think the house is still there. It's still getting rent. I've never been inside. I wouldn't know a tenant if I saw them. For 10 years, they've been doing all the repairs. Now, their option expired 9 years ago.
I wouldn't know how they don't sell.
They didn't care, so I don't care. What if they tear up my house? I'll just lease option it as is to the next tenant buyer with thousands of dollars of money this says that we cannot assign this contract. Remember, we're installing our tenant buyer in house, or we're installing one for the seller. We do not want that tenant buyer to have the right to assign this contract. Well, Ron, how can we assign it? Because our seller's given us permission. That's why the seller clearly knows our intent is to assign this contract. And it's they're going to sign off on it. Remember, we can't bring a buyer in unless the seller approves them, and the seller's going to sign documents at closing. So they've approved our right to assign it, even though this says we can't assign it. So when you put a tenant buyer in there, you don't want them to have the right to assign it. All right. Are you guys getting this stuff, or should we start all over? All right, look at Exhibit A on page 74. I've created two Exhibit A's for you, which is where the information on this lease option agreement is really housed. You'll notice that throughout the entire agreement, when you get a chance to read it, there's no monthly payment and there's no purchase price, for good reason. We transfer that all to Exhibit A. So in reality, other than buyer's name and seller's name, there's not much you need to put in your agreement except that, and the details are covered in Exhibit A. If you look down at the bottom on page 74, you'll see that this Exhibit A is designed for a fixed term with a fixed payment. It says in C that the initial term starts on the 1st of July 2013 and ends on the 30th of June in 2023. So that's a 10-year lease term, okay? But look right below, it says lease payment. The annual lease payment of blank shall be paid in monthly payments of blank, beginning on blank. Very, very simple terms. However, say something.
Yeah, I want to interject here. So, Nick, can you go back to 74? You're right there. Right there is perfect. So one of the things that I get people that don't understand that you have no risk and are not on the hook, where it says here on D, it says lease payment, the annual lease payment of blank, shall be paid monthly installments of blank, whatever the math is, of course.
You keep talking about it.
Beginning on the first day of, this is really important. What we do is we put a little asterisk in that blank right there, right under D. And we take, go put another asterisk down to the bottom, and it says, first payment begins 30 days after the buyer takes occupancy. Again, put a little asterisk in that first blank there on the second paragraph, second sentence. So payments beginning on the first day of blank. Put a little asterisk there. Take an asterisk right to the bottom of that paragraph. First payment begins 30 days after the buyer takes occupancy. So the question is, if the buyer never takes occupancy, when is your first payment due? Obvious answer, it's not. So those that are fearful that you're locking yourself into this agreement, your out clause is right there. Number one. Number two, it also tells the seller that you are keeping the first payment, that your payments begin 30 days after the buyer ultimately takes occupancy. And, of course, if they never do, then you don't ever have to make a payment. And then one other tidbit, we actually put this in some of our agreements that will say not to exceed 90 days. So what that basically tells us is that if we can't find a buyer in 90 days, we may not want to mess it anyway. So I was just going, yeah, we give it a fair time out there, and we can't find a buyer, then we don't want it anyway. Well, that's what I was telling them, that the first payment begins 30 days after. And but you'd be amazed how people get stuck on that. They're so concerned that they're on the hook for this. And I said, yeah. So that's very, very important for you to know. Your out clause is right there if you're genuinely concerned about that.
So let's say it again.
Yep.
We're not agreeing to make any payments. And in fact, it's clear we're going to assign the contract to someone who's going to pay rent 30 days after we install them. Remember now, we get to collect for as much rent in those cases, in addition to all their deposit. The reason we don't need to worry about making payments is because if we don't find that tenant buyer, then there really is no agreement. If our payments start 30 days after we lease it, but we don't lease it, our payments never start. It's just that simple, guys.
And then let me say one more. 8 out of 10 sellers you deal with will not ever balk at the fact that you keep the first payment. Every once in a while, we get somebody. In fact, we had a deal. It was the first deal of the year. But I had a great call with the seller. He was going to, think about it. We decided we'd call back on Monday. It was a Friday afternoon. Call him back. She got an email from him Monday morning and said, Scott, thanks. Thanks, but no thanks. And I'm very surprised. I thought it was a great call. I thought it was a slam dunk. He was down in St. Augustine, World Golf Religion. So I called him back. He said, Chuck, what happened? I thought we had a good call. And as we got to talk a little bit, it dawned on me that it was an $1,800 a month payment. He thought he could do it better than we could and didn't want to concede $1,800. So He said, so you're telling me that if we were to throw that $1,800 payment back in, you're ready to move forward. He said, yeah. I said, all right, well, let me check with the loan committee and we'll get back to you. So anyway, but in all seriousness, we found that that one payment was of interest to him. It was a $260,000 house we knew we were going to get a big deposit on. So we conceded that first payment. If you tell the seller that's how you get paid, you keep what you get from the buyer, you collect the first month's payment as well. 8 out of 10 times, they're not going to balk. You do get a seller once in a while that will. And if you have to throw it back in, you throw it back in. If it's over, that's what it takes to get the deal, still want you to get the deal.
But that only applies to lease options, guys. If I'm selling without a financing, don't forget, their first payment isn't due until 30 days off, so you're not going to keep that one. You just give that to the seller. Interest has to accrue before a payment is due, but rent is paid in advance. All right? Your next page is your option agreement. It says use this when price is fixed. And if you look at paragraph in the middle of the page there, you'll see it covers the $10,000 non-refundable option payment. Notice the words non-refundable. And also this one calls for a $200,000 sales price. Very simple, actually. And if you look at the next page, you see it's also very simple. It just calls for everybody's signature. However, the one I want to call your attention to is the AXE option agreement on the next page. It says at the top, AXE option for over-leveraged houses. Since the house is over-leveraged, and since the buyer is getting credit for debt reduction, you can't name the sales price because it goes down every month. So if you look in the middle of that page, you'll see that there is a zero non-refundable option deposit because we are assigning this contract. Now, if that is applicable, remember, if we're subleasing it in order for them to get credit, then we would put a $20,000 option deposit right there. This one says they're not, in this one we're going to collect an assignment fee. We're not collecting an option deposit. I was simply change that. If I were subleasing it out, even though I intended to sign it back to the seller, you'd have to put the $20,000 right there because that's the only place that the buyer can go and show the bank that they put up a $20,000 deposit. All right? Now, in this case, since the purchase price is the loan balance, same thing. There's an asterisk there in the purchase price followed by an addition to that paragraph that says the purchase price equals the loan balance at the time of closing. Now, if you didn't get all of that, don't worry. A lot of people don't get all of that on the first go around. And again, there are lessons on your Gold Club site where I go through that thoroughly. And if you're getting my controlled ownership, if this is on the way, we go through it. Remember, this is 2 days here. We're 2 days, so a lot more time to spend on these.
Yeah, if you want them to put approximate balance today is blank.
You can. If you feel like that, you can put the approximate balance right in there after that line.
Just to give us an idea of kind of where it is today.
Yeah. Okay. Now, go to page 80 and 81, and you'll love these as well. These were prepared by our attorney. There's a general release here for the seller, a general release for the buyer. And they are beautiful. In fact, if you'll read them, you'll see that only an attorney could write that kind of language. And basically, it says that we are released from anything and everything that could happen to this house from the beginning of time until our death. That's pretty much what it says, doesn't it? It's what it says. Seller signs off on it, and the buyer signs off on it. Well, let's be square here on when we get these signed. Okay. If I'm getting a general release from the seller, it means I have no obligation left to the seller. So if I'm sandwich leasing it, I don't get this general release signed by the seller. Nor do I get it signed by the buyer because I'm still in it with both of those folks. But if I'm assigning my contract, I want both of these signed. I'm going to say that again. If I'm staying in it, I don't need either of these signed because I'm not getting a general release. I still owe the seller and the buyer still owes me. If I'm getting out of it, I want both of them signed. So I want this general release by the seller signed at the time we install the buyer along with that CYA letter we discussed earlier. Okay? I want the buyer to sign the general release when they go to closing. It's one of the documents that you give your attorney to put out in front of them to get them to sign. But remember, that's only if I'm out of it. Only if I'm out of it. facing it to my tenant buyer, and I intend to assign that back to the seller, I'm going to tell my buyer I'm going to do that. So they'll know where to send their payments. At the same time, I'm going to make sure I get them to assign this at closing. I don't really want to go get this signed after closing. I want to get it signed while I'm still in control of the deal. All right? Anything I missed on that, I'll explain it.
Just in front of the attorney. I guess say that again.
Yeah.
In front of the attorney.
All of these things are signed in front of the attorney with the exception of whatever document you are controlling the purchase of the house with. That was signed in the home. I really need to get an attorney involved until I know I got a deal. I don't have a deal until I get the buyer. In fact, that's my last thing here when I get an attorney involved. All right. Your next page is your assignment of a lease purchase agreement. Your attorney will probably have their own form. On the other hand, they very well may like this form. With all of these forms, you send them to your attorney and say, this is what I'm using. Do you see anything you want to change in it? Of course, they'll change something. I justify their fee, you know, but let them. But honestly, guys, you should let the attorneys decide what language needs to be in there for the state you live in, and not try to say, I'll guess your attorneys. Your attorneys know the law. You do not. Let your attorneys do what they do best. And anything they want to change in here, I'm happy with. But as far as my lease purchase agreement goes, I would be very careful about letting them remove stuff. Whatever they want to add, I don't care. But when they remove it, I want to make sure that it is clearly understood why they want to remove it. And if there's something that conflicts with state law, you don't have any choice. But sometimes attorneys remove stuff without a full understanding of why that stuff is in there. And look, it's just simple. Make sure you know why they do it. Challenge them on it if you want to. If you're happy with your answer, then go do it. All right. When to get an attorney involved, that's very simply this. Anytime I have an ongoing relationship with seller or buyer, you must close with an attorney. If I had a way to make it a law, I would, because it is to protect you guys. Anytime you have an ongoing relationship, which means a lease option or owner financing, you have a possibility that something's going to happen in the future and you're going to get attacked. Plus, you want to make sure you're complying with the law. Especially with this Dodd-Frank thing, now it applies to owner financing, and lease options, which apply to Texas. Dodd-Frank applies to the United States. That's a federal law. I want you to have the right documents in your file. I want you to have the disclosures in your file. I want it to be real, real clear that everything has been disclosed and signed off on by both parties. I want those forms permanently in my file so that if I ever needed them, I know exactly where they're at. I want the releases so that I can feel good that I can go to bed at night and have any more ties to this house in case of an assignment. And I guess equally important, I want to know that my buyer has sat in front of an attorney, feels like it was done right, feels like it was done professionally, so they never get the thought that, man, I've been taken advantage of because they sit in somebody's living room across the table from a non-attorney signing documents. And I want my seller to be the same way. I want my attorney to come in contact with my seller. Usually our sellers don't go into our attorney's office. Sometimes they do. But the attorney is always in contact with them, getting them to sign additional documents. In fact, if you go back to your LOI, it says there will be additional documents to sign. And I want my seller to know that it was also done legitimately.
We use that at the initial call as well. We always let them know we close the attorney and everything we do. We got credibility kit, credibility factor.
And that's exactly what they want to hear, guys and gals, that we close with an attorney, and you should. So, do yourself a favor and do not close any of these deals without an attorney. Now, the question I get a lot, well, why do I use a title company? Well, there's a couple of reasons. In some states, like Florida, the title company cannot close these deals unless they write title insurance. Well, I'm not going to let them write title insurance. That costs more to hire an attorney, twice as much, in fact. Secondly, title companies aren't going to represent you in court. They're not representing your best interest. They're representing their underwriter's best interest. Even though the title company, some of them are pretty sharp, some of them aren't, that does not replace an attorney. So if you get challenged, what are you going to do? Call your title agent in and have them be your attorney illegally? They can't do it, guys.
By the way, the buyer pays for the attorney anyway.
The buyer pays for the attorney. Our attorney's fees are always borne by the buyer 100% of the time. Sometimes you'll pay the fee. For example, if I'm closing a subject to deal and I'm staying in it, or if I'm buying it with owner financing and I'm staying in it, the seller's not getting any money, I'll absorb the closing cost to buy. In some states, that's a big deal. Some states, it's not. But rarely do I pay closing costs. Never do I pay the closing costs on an assignment or when I'm lease optioning to a tenant buyer. Never. Tenant buyer always pays the attorney's fees. Ours is what, $400?
Yeah.
Okay, that's just something we negotiate with an attorney. Remember now, we're sending the documents to the attorney already filled out. I mean, look, we got to know what goes in the blanks, and the attorney don't know what goes in the blanks, so we just go ahead and fill them out. We send it to them. They add all the crap they want, and really all the attorney does is sit there and explain it to the buyer. You know, it's not like they're spending hours filling out documents.
Yeah, we got to a point with scheduling where it was just easier for us to. They create the documents. All we do is fill in the blanks, give